Welcome to the show today. This is, John, a couple of days before the municipal election showdown in our region. Are you excited?
I've been excited on every show that we've talked about this election. And it's crescendoing. Okay, that's our word for today. Thank you. We always have a word of the day. And it's crescendoing. Okay. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's peaking because...
You can't
literally
change the
every
word.
Of the 38,000 municipalities in our region have an exciting race.
It's getting interesting. Some of it's getting dirty. Some of it's getting down to the wire. There's some interesting polls.
It's getting dirty.
There is some interesting stuff going down. And, you know, for those of you who are regular listeners, all 12 of you, those are the regular listeners now. So we always had 12 or 13 listeners, but now there's 12 or 13 regular listeners.
Wow.
We have with us one of the best known Bernards in Victoria, and actually one of the best known political nerds in Victoria as well.
I thought you and I were the big political nerds.
You know what? No.
Among.
Among. Among our.
You see how
weapons?
Good he is? He actually listens.
So when I went to pick this fine gentleman up, there were seven signs on his lawn. We won't say who they were for. He goes by @DC_iconoclast. Is that right?
Yeah.
DC_iconoclast on Twitter. But he's perhaps best known as the key guy, the blogger behind Victoria Vision, which is victoriavision.blogspot.ca. And so we're really excited to sit down this week with Bernard von Schulman. Welcome to the show, Bernard.
Thanks for inviting me in all the way out here at the Tech Park.
So far from...
He as excited as we are? Is he crescendoing too?
I'm not sure.
I think I am.
This is a good one. This is, you know.
So this is going to be quite the show. We got a ton of stuff to go through. We'll try to keep it under 3-4 hours.
At least I'll get hungry.
Big announcement though for me, and I'm not sure what's going on in your world these days, but John, we're just wrapping up the final batch of early bird tickets for Social Media Camp. This is an opportunity for people who are interested in such a thing to save about $100.
I always found Social Media Camp a bit bizarre because this isn't the point of social media for me to be able to avoid meeting people in person.
It could be for some
I've been
people.
Doing a good job of that over the last few years. You know, John and I have never actually met in person until today.
If you want to get better at not meeting people, then you can come to Social Media Camp.
Social Media Camp.
Yeah.
Although we tease about it, we're making fun of it.
Yeah.
The premier social media conference in North America.
In Canada.
I'm saying North America.
Okay, you can say
can
that.
Can Americans be better at something?
It's possible.
And it is originally started by one of the eminent three people around Mike here, that being you, Paul.
Yeah.
So I think that's fantastic. I think... where is it being held? When?
It's going to be at the Victoria Conference Center.
Yeah.
It's a ways off. What we do every year is we have a very early batch of tickets where people can save $100 if they know they're going next year. So it's actually May 21st to 23rd, 2015 this year.
If I can get my two bits in here, it would be really, really cool to discuss or have a discussion. You maybe already have a slot open about the role of social media in politics. And I hope we can talk with Bernard around that because I think it's going to have an impact this time around.
And I think...
You do?
Well, some people think it doesn't, that it's all just chatter. It's all just blah, 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 blah.
I've got strong opinions on that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
It's actually...
Why don't we start there?
Sure, yeah. It's actually interesting living out in Souk. I found two candidates that did not have Twitter handles. One of them had an egg on their Twitter handle. And then, and most of them weren't actually using it really to communicate.
I mean, I saw this in 2008 and 2011, is that in this region, very few people who are running the elections have any idea what they're doing with social media, but they invent it all right in time for the election and then have no idea what to do with it. And then some of them get, wow, this is working really well when they're communicating with 100 people. You know, they have like, 224 likes on Facebook and among my group, and they sort of talk to a tiny group, and they're not getting out to a lot of people. You have like YouTube channels, and they're, I got 47 views on this video. It's like, they're not, they're trying to do it, but they haven't got a faintest idea how they're going to reach a lot of people, how to engage people in it. And
do you think that's changed this time around in 2014?
No, because, some of the candidates, I've met with a lot of the candidates across the region. And, like, I had one of them, she said to me, well, I only set up a Facebook account because of the election, and I don't know about this Twitter thing. Well, and they're still there.
Don't you think there's a huge opportunity on the advertising side of it, though? Like, I have had on my Facebook stream a gazillion ads for different candidates.
Yeah, well, that only works if you have a web page to go to that is worth reading. Yeah. And one of the problems a lot of the candidates have is they between the three of us, we can probably come up with the 20 most common words they all use, and that mean nothing. I mean, they all could be
fiscally
doing
fiscally irresponsible?
With vibrant sustainability and a bright future.
The
problem is,
yeah.
You know, you start looking at the website and they all start sounding the same, and they all start using the same words, and you're looking at it going, huh? And so, you know, yes, you might go into Facebook and you might go on Twitter. You might get ads to get people to your website. But if your website isn't giving people letting people know about you, what's the point?
Isn't this the problem, though, with politics generally? Like, you know, nobody wants to go read a big, long biography about, you know, the 17 committees you've sat on. On the flip side, you can use throwaway words like experience and leadership and vision and all this stuff, which could mean absolutely anything.
Well,
right?
I think social media this time in politics as a one would think that it's out there so that it can generate votes. I don't think that's its purpose, and I don't think that's its role. I think it does have a role in generating volunteers and securing your own base,
yeah.
and garnering your own people to see that there's momentum with your candidate.
I could agree with that.
And in that sense,
yeah.
It is working. And in that sense, you can see Lisa really using it.
Yeah.
It's like a digital lawn sign, is that?
No, because the lawn sign is trying to attract. Well, possibly it is really.
Lawn signs are really about engaging with the base and showing that they're showing them all that it's worth going and voting for that candidate because they see lots of lawn signs.
Well, no, in municipal elections, it's also really important for people recognizing your name at all.
Yeah,
because the problem in municipal elections is, you know, the city of Victoria, you've got 24 people running, of which most people have only heard of a handful of them. How are they supposed to even? They show up at the ballot box and they go, huh? Well, if they had at least seen the signs often enough, they might know about them, yeah. Might have searched out and looked something up about them.
I mean, I've been following provincial politics from I can't even remember when. And
Pre-Barrett?
No.
W.A.C. Bennett?
It started with Barrett.
W.A.C. Bennett? Is
No. And last couple elections, I don't know what those exact years were, we did see at within a month to 6 weeks of the writ being dropped, all this stuff start, new Facebook pages, mm-hmm. and then this just junk showing up on them, and then they die, right? A week
oh,
after,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. There's still Twitter accounts from BC Liberal lapsed candidates where the last one was May, whatever year that was,
so
2010
I've
or whatever.
I've watched, and Ida and Murray and Robin and all of the Liberal candidates around here, yeah. I've seen them go through the cycle. And so this time around, I've noticed, of all four, Ida's bought a lot of ads.
Right.
So we talked offline, you and I, Paul. I mean, Bernard, your opinion, like, is that where you buy ads? Does that work?
You promote posts, right? You promote a post, and when you promote a post, you can promote around keywords. So if somebody's always, you know, talking about on their Facebook, they're always posting stuff about gardens, right? And you have a platform that's, you know, about community gardens, you could target some post to that so that people see that and they're like, oh wow, this is the candidate that's in favor of community gardens. So, you know, they're going to, you know, this is but it would take a fair amount of money, I'd say, and a fair amount of sophistication to actually do that kind of targeting, but
so
it certainly
the advertising
is, it certainly
might be more effective.
I think it could
than
be
the community.
I think it'd be huge. Honestly, if
in terms of getting votes,
if I was running in the city of Victoria and had a budget, I would direct half my marketing to social and you know 90% of that to Facebook.
Wow, what do you think of that? Is he going to win or lose?
Well, for some reason,
I win anyway because I'm
for
awesome.
Some reason he didn't run in Souk, and I don't quite understand why.
Exactly. Thank you. I've been trying now for 6 months to get him to run somewhere.
But just back on social media, yeah. I mean, Pro-Amalgamation I've been involved with. We did do some Facebook advertising, not a lot of money, but it's wow, did it add a lot of people for us that were joined our Facebook group. Or page liked it, and it's actually been useful in getting volunteers, and actually been useful in getting. So we put out a post now. So instead of previously you get 70, 80, now our posts get somewhere between 600 and 1,000
no kidding,
views.
From
so
ads.
It's been nice. It's wow. been nice, and it has been working wow. yeah. In that way. And now the one thing, just back on social media, where I think social media works really well is not in the elections, but is between the elections for the people who understand how to use it.
Yeah,
you look at somebody like Frank Leonard. He may not be the most exciting person. He's been in Spanish for 18 years as mayor, but he actually uses Twitter, and he'll actually respond
yeah,
to
that's
on Twitter.
True, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Susan Bryce on Facebook. If I have a problem, I send a message to Susan, and it gets dealt with.
Yeah, yeah,
Barb
yeah.
Lee Jardin.
Yeah. Yes.
Barb
yeah, one day Jardin. I was walking in the Gorge
She's
Park.
Like my best friend on Facebook.
I was walking in Gorge Park. I saw a problem. I took a picture, sent it to her on some Facebook or Twitter and that, and bang, it was fixed the next day.
Yeah.
So they are knowing how to use it, and they are using it to communicate with the public in a much better way than has ever been possible before. But one person who's running this time that I am really surprised at how he was a very consistent Twitter user and interaction on Twitter that sort of has dropped off from being doing much is Stephen Andrew. Stephen Andrew was a guy who used Twitter a lot. And now in the election, it's sort of like the man is gone from the account.
Well, I worked and raised money for Robin Adair in the 08 election, and he lost by 400 or 500 votes to Lana Popham. So I had like this direct a dialogue and understanding of how potentially a past reporter, a media person, was running in politics. And it's a unique personality because you come from a place where you do have quite a bit of listenership, and you think that it transfers over to voting, and it actually doesn't.
And yeah, but so, Robin had a long gap between being on air and running.
I know.
Stephen's
so
much shorter.
Exactly. Yeah. But still, I think it's not an immediate transfer of votes.
Yeah.
No.
Can I interject my view on that?
No.
I think that Lisa Helps and Dean Fortin are very good around social media and have done a really good job in developing their following. I think a lot of people followed Stephen Andrew because he was a media guy. And so they're interested in following him for the media. I don't think they were necessarily, especially on Twitter, necessarily his friends.
I think they were
interested followers.
But Stephen Andrew did interact with people. Lisa Helps does interact with people. Yeah. The one thing, Dean Fortin may have a lot of followers, but if you ever notice, his stuff is all about promoting something from the city of Victoria. It's very little about who is Dean Fortin, and there's very little interaction with him. And I believe it was the 2008 election where I pointed out that, you know, he had, you know, a bajillion followers and followed nobody, and there wasn't a single post of his that had an interaction. Suddenly he started following a few more people, but his account is very much, you know, as just a push account. He's just pushing stuff out to people.
I actually disagree, and that may have been the case at one point, but I've had a lot of interaction with Dean Fortin on
Twitter.
Okay,
I don't expect Dean Fortin to interact with me personally.
and suffice to say, most of probably what I've interacted with him on have been things related to the city, and so they may have gone through a screening
process.
But
Bernard's right. I mean, I'm not disappointed, but I would have enjoyed to have Stephen Andrew continue at the interactive
being Stephen
pace.
Andrew.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm missing, and that's what I'm not seeing. There is the Stephen. I mean, I've been following Stephen Andrew for years and interacting with him for years on social media. And just, you know, in the election campaign, he's sort of like, I won't say gone to ground, but he certainly isn't present in the way that he was before the election. And that I enjoyed that about him.
So why don't we then just sort of quickly identify who we think is the most active, and let's call it, I suppose we can't do all the municipalities, and then maybe post-election, see if that made a difference.
Ah.
If they're active social media campaigning. So
is that something you've already identified in your research?
I've been meaning to do it for all the municipalities, and I've been so far behind in trying to do stuff because I still have to try and work and make money and that sort of stuff.
I know. Doesn't that suck?
I
hate that part.
But, certainly, I think
in Victoria, it's Lisa. There's no doubt about it. She's
certainly
miles ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I would say by far in the social media world, she's the one I think who's got the most presence, and especially if you're thinking of social media that is interacting with people consistently.
Colin Plant in Saanich has been fascinating. He's been getting all kinds of neat posts and building upon odd sign stuff.
Luckily, he had somebody really smart suggest that he do something like that and then phone.
Was that you?
I refuse to comment.
Oh, I did!
I'm privileged myself.
Whoever it was quite brilliant.
Yes. And I won't say that I'm heading off after here to go do phone calling for Colin Plant.
I've done a bunch of work
out
in Langford, and it was quite interesting how about a month ago, all of that council got new Facebook pages, got new Twitter accounts, got new web pages.
They have them? I can't find them.
Yes.
Like, I still can't find their pages.
Oh, okay, well,
I'll send you.
Yeah, yeah.
The only person on the West Shore, on any of the councils there that I find that is a consistent person in social media is Carol Hamilton, the mayor, and Colwood. She's the only one that I see out there, not counting Souk. I mean, Souk's a different universe anyway. And yeah. That's your universe to worry about.
Well, I live there, and I'll vote there inevitably
once
I can figure out who to vote for. But,
You're not actually, a Maya Tate all the way guy.
I'll withhold any comment. But there are some really great candidates. Brenda Parkinson is running for council there.
I'd happily vote for Brenda.
Brenda's
but which of those
really
folks
fantastic.
Do you think has the most vibrant or active social media campaign?
There isn't
Souk?
One.
None.
Yeah, they're there. They have pages and they have Twitter accounts and they're mostly push accounts.
There's one person out there that I've had interactions with is Carrie Ray on her social
media. Oh yes, Carrie's great. Yeah.
Okay, Bernard, why isn't this happening? And why should it happen? Has it worked somewhere before where there's been an active digital campaign?
Like Calgary, for example?
Well, then what's the difference? I've understand Obama used it brilliantly. Why are we doing that?
Well, Obama used it brilliantly 6 years ago, right?
And 9 years ago now. No, how long six years?
6 years
okay.
ago.
Okay.
And that was when it was all new and exciting. Oh. You know, I think any example of that Obama may have given us from 6 years ago is pretty much 100% irrelevant at this in this day and age.
All right.
But you can look at what
Nenshi
did in Calgary.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to figure out how social media can be functionally used for political organizing and win election campaigns and actually do something. And every time I figure out how you can make use of Facebook functionally and usefully for political campaigns, Facebook changes their interface. And it's like, you can't do that anymore. Oh, you can't do that anymore. And it's like, so Facebook I find incredibly frustrating. As soon as you figure out a way to use it for political organizing, they remove that ability for you. And for Twitter, it's how do you know you're reaching people or not? How do you know you're actually having an impact? And I haven't been able to figure out any of this. I mean, Nenshi in Calgary managed to get I don't know how you pull it off. How do you get something to go viral? And I've yet to figure that one out.
What happened? He had his message.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people liked it and started posting it over and over and over again.
Sharing. Oh, I see.
I mean,
isn't that interesting?
I mean, I've been blogging for, 8-9 years now. And my most popular blog posting of all time, I wrote in 2011, and it got posted onto Reddit in August, and I suddenly got 13,000 views in one day for that blog posting. And it's just like, how would I mean, it's totally out of sync with anything else I've ever done before. I had no way I could have predicted it, no way I could have known that would happen. It just happened because somebody posted it because they thought it was relevant to something
relevant,
else.
It's relevant, yeah. And once you hit the front page of Reddit, then it's insane.
Yeah.
They'll bring down your site. But it's interesting. We had Todd Maffin speak at Social Media Camp last year as our keynote, and his keynote talk was I can't remember exactly what the terminology was, but it was essentially dissecting viral and looked for commonalities in every viral campaign so that you could build viral campaigns by integrating those commonalities. No guarantee it's going to go viral, but certainly if you've got all the elements of a viral campaign within your campaign, then the odds are a lot better in your favor.
Well, I'd love to sit back after this and have another chat. However, I want to talk about something.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, before the campaign, it seemed like before the writ was dropped, there's no writ in municipal politics, but it seemed like after Labor Day, that was kind of a sense that there was enormity mind space filled with amalgamation-related chatter, okay, which I thought was fantastic. And it seemed like after the so-called unofficial writ was dropped, that it went away. It just sounded like it's not, no one's talking about it, and that the media people they'll ask about the issues and they go, oh, what about amalgamation at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it seemed to be at the front. You know, like, what do you think?
Bernard might have a few things to say.
Well, exactly.
Well, it's what I think. What happens is before the election, you're talking about an issue. and not about candidates. Now, we're in an election, you're talking about candidates and specific races. And so amalgamation, you know, it's not a candidate, it's a specific issue. And keeping any one specific issue as a strong thing through an election is hard to do. And, I mean, at least we got an hour on CFAX to debate it last week. And hopefully people listen to that and pay attention to it. But it's, I won't say it's hard to get people enthusiastic about it, but it's hard to campaign for it in the context of all these other people campaigning for office. Well, plus because I've been working with people trying to do this.
Plus, and they get very emotionally attached to your sort of region. You know, you get, these are my people, these are the people I'm going to vote for. And you don't seem to think, oh, you know, larger than that.
Well, I don't. I think it's going to, I think the votes are going to pass in most of the places, if not all of them. I'm not certain, but the trend I'm getting is that almost everywhere it's going to get. There's going to be a yes vote.
I just can't imagine who would say no to this stuff.
Well, and it's not. They're not even saying. This is the brilliant part about it. And the question generally, although Saanich made up their own weird question, the question generally is saying, you know, are you in favor of studying this?
Yeah, well, that's the question that Amalgamation US wanted them to do.
Exactly.
Most of them didn't adopt that.
Oh.
Like the Three Peninsula communities actually adopted one. Would you like us to look into amalgamating the three of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Or study that? So they asked that. Oak Bay and Langford asked outright, do you want to see our municipality amalgamated into a larger regional municipality?
Yeah.
So there's different places have asked it in different ways.
Different questions, yeah.
So they're not consistent anywhere,
right.
Which makes it also difficult to just vote yes for what? Well, here, and you know, it's all very different.
And the pro-am candidates, tell us a little bit about that. And if I'm voting for Justin Stevenson and Souk, for example... sorry, not Justin Stevenson.
Stevenson is not Justin running Stevenson. In Souk. He's still running in Victoria. He hasn't moved.
We're going to edit that part.
No, you're not.
Hanson?
Yes.
Justin Hanson.
Yes, a lawyer.
If I'm voting for Justin Hanson in Souk, am I voting in favor of amalgamation, or what am I voting
yes.
for?
Yes. I mean, the whole point of the pro-amalgamation, which I was involved with Jim Lee in getting this started, was... at the end of July, it looked like in this region we would have at most two municipalities ask an amalgamation question, and that was it. And Jim has had this idea for years that, well, why don't we just run somebody as, you know, pro-amalgamation for each of the councils, and that way that's proof that there's support for it. So we announced, and after we announced, fairly quickly, six more municipalities decided it was a good time. Let's have a question. And several of them had actually already said no, and they wouldn't.
Yeah.
And they reconsidered. And really? They changed their mind.
I didn't know that.
North
Saanich changed their mind. Oak Bay changed their mind.
A threat.
Saanich had refused to even consider it and wouldn't talk about it at all, and then decided to hold a question, which is an amalgamation question. But it's so broad-based, and they're talking about a process afterwards, I don't know how they don't talk amalgamation. But then we were left with five municipalities where they didn't end up holding a question and were running candidates in three of them, View, Royal, Colwood, and Souk.
Mm-hmm.
Highlands, we didn't find anybody who was – we actually couldn't get 50 members. You have to get 50 members to be an electoral organization. We couldn't get 50 members in Highlands. We would have had the members in Metchosin, but we had nobody interested in running in Metchosin. And we weren't going to, you know, nobody was keen to want to do it there. We had somebody ready in North Saanich. We had somebody ready in Saanich. If there's no question, either one of those.
Wow.
We had people ready to go.
Wow.
But both of them changed their minds. And so we didn't run them. But yeah, it's our stated thing in the case where the candidates are running is if you do not support amalgamation, do not vote for these candidates. Do not vote for Justin Hanson in Souk if you do not believe in amalgamation.
I really like Justin Hanson, though. And I like some of the other things that he's talked about. What if I'm not in favor of amalgamation?
Don't vote for him.
I'm going to vote for him anyway. I'm messing with you now.
Yeah. No, but it's the candidates we found, the three that were running and the other ones that we didn't run because we didn't need to run them. We also looked for people that were of a high quality, that would be good counselors, that would be at least as good or better than what they currently have. I think in Colwood's case, our candidate there, Natalia, will be a dramatic improvement over what Calwood Council has had. As I mean, they've had some real duds in Calwood, and they don't have. Yeah, she'll be a huge improvement.
Well, I was chamber chair, Victoria chamber chair in 2009. Was involved with the chamber since 1999. It's where I met Paul, and this issue of amalgamation has been. On the desire for municipalities to amalgamate has been on the books for a long time. There's some ridiculous numbers, like 100 years.
Well, I found this great TC editorial, or not TC, I can't remember what the Times were calling this, from 1949, bemoaning the fact that Saanich wouldn't let its people vote on on whether they should study amalgamation or not with Victoria. In 1949!
So, you know,
I remember that. The board
year would have this retreat. We'd keep bringing up this issue of amalgamation, and we would get there'd be no resonance in the community. Mm-hmm. Zero. So then we decided, well, what are we going to do? Let's focus on services. Okay, mm-hmm. This was a matter of not avoiding or not ignoring the issue of amalgamation. But how do we get to that when nobody's interested? Mm-hmm. Okay, and there was never this kind of strategic thinking that you guys undertook this year. Mm-hmm. I really need to say publicly to all of the 12 or 13 people that are listening that I commend you, because there's not been any group of individuals in this region that have had as much success as your group has as moving this issue forward. Congratulations. Long overdue.
Yeah.
What, you know, that's boy, awesome. Boy, can we somehow keep the... That's why I was curious about, you know, the noise and the mind space. I hope it doesn't go away, Bernard.
If we get the three municipalities in the peninsula all vote that they are in favor of looking at it, I see them going forward. And as the municipalities in this region go, they're probably the closest to having cooperated on the most stuff. And they actually, as councils, meet together from time to time, which, you know, Saanich and Victoria and Opay and Victoria and Squamult and Saanich, they never actually meet together and talk. The peninsula ones at least do. So I have a hope there that if there is a positive vote in all three of them, that they will actually start the process. My hope is that Colwood and Langford will sit down and actually seriously talk about it finally, if there's a yes vote in Langford and if Natalia gets elected in Colwood. And I think that's possible. Oak Bay, both people running for mayor in Oak Bay seem to be dead set against the concept. Neither one of them has ever expressed to me a good reason why they're opposed to it. I mean, certainly for people in Oak Bay, if they amalgamated with Victoria today, their property taxes would go down, so it'd save them money. So for some reason, they prefer to pay more for local government. But
whatever. Maybe they can afford it.
Maybe. But
who knows?
And Saanich, it'll be interesting to see what Saanich's process is. The mayor, Frank Leonard, is going to vote in favor of the Saanich question, which doesn't use the amalgamation word. But it seemed to be very...
One brick at a time, I guess.
It's now, now there is, you know, there's something starting, something will start there, and maybe Saanich will actually go through a process that will move things forward. I mean, I think my ultimate goal in the short term is that Victoria and Saanich in some way, shape, or form amalgamate and then become such a big entity in the CRD that the others have no choice but to finally agree.
Since we have our numbers guy, and I know you've been behind a lot of the push for amalgamation here, I do, however, want to jump into some numbers and some issues. So, and I know you've done a video series now with Mike DeWolf and
Ted Godron
on your YouTube channel for Victoria Vision. Mm-hmm. What are some of the big issues you guys have talked about and our listeners may not have already heard about?
You mean they haven't heard everything yet?
I don't know.
I've certainly, in a number of the videos, raised things in relation to amalgamation. One of them is what I think is what we lack in this region is any sort of leadership. Who speaks for this region? Mm. There is no person who can speak and saying, this is what Victoria wants. This is what this region is in favor of.
Quite
this
the opposite. Quite
we have the opposite. We have no vision for this region.
They work under the table against each other.
Well,
the way it is.
And actually, can I interject? This was a big issue. You remember when Paul Martin was prime minister and he brought together all of the civic leaders for his city's agenda, and Saskatoon was at the table, but Victoria wasn't. And basically Saskatoon had a higher population than Victoria or Saanich did.
Keep in mind, Kelowna has a higher population than any place around here.
Yeah.
So Kelowna has more legitimate reason to show up. Exactly. It is something federal or something provincial than anybody in Victoria does. Because
they're a mega city, though, Bernard. They're a mega city.
Kelowna?
Yeah. How can you stand the fact that there's this huge mega city and they elect this enormous government that...
Whoops. Well,
this is the big argument against Saskatoon. Right?
Saskatoon.
Am I right about that? Yeah, it's the everyone's like, Toronto, no! Right?
Yeah, but who
what they don't realize is that before Toronto amalgamated, most of those cities were bigger than our entire region.
And what they also ignore is the fact is that amalgamation BC here, I don't see anybody in Nanaimo saying that they need to split the city back up again. I don't see people in Kamloops saying that Kamloops, oh my God, how dare we have only one municipality? We need six again. Or Kelowna. Or Port Alberni saying, my God, the horror that Port Alberni and Alberni were amalgamated into one community. I don't hear anybody arguing that any of those should be undone.
Right.
I've never heard of anybody arguing for any of the amalgamations in British Columbia that have happened to be undone.
So you're in favor, just to be on the record then, you're in favor of the mega city Port Alberni? You're in favor of that?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Not in that context. Mega city Duncan. Okay, let's switch up. We're all in favor of this issue, let's drop it, okay?
Yeah,
okay.
No, let's talk about some other issues.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one of the problems then is, then I'll also talk about on one of the videos, is the city of Victoria has had a serious lack of leadership on the political level. Who's the last person that was elected to the city of Victoria Council that really had any leadership, that had any real drive, vision, or direction of where they wanted to take the city?
Peter Pollan.
Well, not Bull in the China shop, let's cause trouble.
Well, then we're going way back to Barrett times.
Before Barrett. I can't think of anybody.
I'm not understanding the question.
Okay, so who's...
You mean elected as mayor?
Mayor or even a councillor.
Well, what about Lisa Helps?
Lisa Helps has
a very different vision of Victoria.
She may or may not have the leadership skills. She was on council as a first-term councillor who's learning her place. I don't think she had the leadership skills yet to be that person, but she could be that person.
But within the context of what Bernard is saying, within the last, let's say, 40 years, okay, I see your point. Where are you going with that? Tell me.
Well, it's not good for our local government to basically be sort of directionless. The city of Victoria is directionless because we've had nobody leading it when to go anywhere. I mean, Alan Lowe, really nice guy, but I don't see what the vision of the city was. And I still don't see what the vision of the city of Victoria is and where it's headed. And we have had problems with no planning for the future. And then when things are decided that are important, then they just sort of get put aside because somebody else comes up with a new priority on a new issue on something else and spend the money on that instead of doing what they actually originally...
Okay.
Well, let's
rephrase this a little bit. As opposed to a leader with vision, let's talk about potentially a demographic with vision, okay? So you know where I'm going with this. So in Victoria, because it happens...
You're talking about our kids.
I will, yes. Oh, okay. The youth vote. The 25 to 40-year-olds. And for our 13-year-old 13-year-old listeners... Yeah. Our 13...
They can't vote.
Our 13... We've interviewed the young municipal candidates in three municipalities, maybe more. So, point being, is this now a potential legitimate demographic? Of course, it's legitimate. People are living, paying taxes. But are they becoming a legitimate political demographic, a political factor? And who do they hurt? Which candidate benefits, which candidate hurts, are they coming from a party? Let's talk about that, because that deals with that issue of leadership. If that group elects their person, then their issues will become the vision for that municipality.
Okay. Who it hurts is the people who are tied to the traditional political parties. The traditional political parties, be it the Federal Conservatives, the BC Liberals, or the NDP, they're getting older and older. I'm pushing 50 soon, and I still look young. When I go to an NDP thing, I still look young. If I go to a Federal Conservative thing, I look like I should be going to the youth band events. Like, I should be one of the old people at these events. I'm not. Or I should say, the only young people getting involved with the traditional political parties tend to be people who have some agenda of wanting to be a politician and not because they just
do
it.
So do you think we're having an actual, like a real shift in values like we haven't seen since the 60s?
Very much so. I mean, you look at the NDP is basically run by the people who were the rebellious youth of the 60s, and it's still the same people.
Right.
I can't be turning 50 and have the NDP and go to an NDP thing and feel young. That's wrong. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. But I do.
Well, I'm with... Okay, Bernard, I'm with you.
And I'd like to hear your viewpoints, Paul, because arguably you're the closest to that demographic. But I do
I'm 41.
I do think that we're seeing a value shift, and that group hasn't voted, and I think they will vote this time.
Okay, well, it's an interesting thing is as more and more research is being done on this, the better educated people are and the younger people are, the less likely they are to vote if they don't have something to vote for. If they can't justify what they're voting for, if they can't justify this, I'm making this choice because I believe in this person, I believe in this direction they're going, the answer is don't vote. The answer is I should not be making a bad decision. Better to make no decision than a bad decision. And if I can't, I see that over and over again.
I think you nailed it. I think you absolutely nailed it. I'm involved in theater out in Souk, for example, and I had a young fellow, first time he can vote. He's like, who should I vote for? And I'm like, well, I'll tell you who you shouldn't vote for. He's like, well, I'm not going to go to not vote for somebody. I need to know who I vote for and why. And I was like, well, that's interesting because, you know, people our age might strategically vote. You know, I know in the last provincial election, I strategically voted to not have somebody win as opposed to voting for
somebody. So is it enough, therefore, to be not able to afford to live here, to be able to not work here, and to be able to not have the municipality, not to have the money to finance the recreation facilities? Are those three things, work, live, and play, now enough of a need or a drive for a young person to vote? Because that's what's happening in our community.
Okay, which candidates out there are connecting with them? That's the problem, is which candidates out there are really connecting with that sort of thing?
Well, I'm going to have a biased answer.
Yeah,
I mean, and I wouldn't say it. But who do you guys think?
Well, I'll play the cynic here, John, because you know I can. I don't think anybody is. You know, the reality is there's youth centers which appeal to teenagers, and there's senior centers that appeal to seniors. That, you know, once you're out of high school, you know, you're.
But then doesn't that become compelling enough to say that Bernard's point? That becomes an issue to vote for somebody?
I do see a couple.
Not till parents have kids, and they're not having kids until their mid-30s, and that whole in-between time is just.
Say there's a couple candidates in this region that I think are coming close to being appealing to people under age 40, people in their 20s and 30s, and that would be Lisa Helps and Jeremy Loveday in Victoria. Mm-hmm. Those are two. I know there's younger candidates running out there, but they either have no campaign at all and not really trying, or they are political wannabes, and I have real trouble with them because I don't like people who are running for, you know, be a municipal council so they can eventually be something else in the future.
President of the world.
Because they tend not to be terribly good. But, I mean, having paid attention across this region, there's not a lot of other ones out there. There's potentially Grant McLaughlin in Langford, maybe. I don't know if he's
a... But maybe Drew Finnerty. I think we had a good interview with him.
You know, but there's just not a lot of them. And I don't think people... The problem is, okay, if you've been in, you know, you got, let's say in the past, you got involved with the NDP when you're 16, 17, and you did 10, 12 years with them. By the time you're 30, you know campaigning 101. You know what you need to do to get elected. You know how to reach the people. So what I'm meeting is candidates now who are 30, you know, that's middle-aged, you know. By any definition, 30 is middle-aged. They haven't got the faintest idea of how to campaign.
Yeah.
They don't even have any idea of what they need to do.
Yeah.
And that, they haven't come from, they come from a non-political culture or background. And they have to learn it then. So by the time they figure it out, they're actually quite a bit older already. So I don't know how this changes. At some point, I think you'll have somebody figure it out, and somebody will connect with people who are younger.
Correct.
And they will show up, and they'll vote, and they'll scare the bejesus out of people.
Exactly. And I think that fright is within campaigns right now, and either they know why they're not resonating at the doorstep, or they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I see it resonating at the federal level, because for some reason, Trudeau is ahead. I don't get that.
Neither do I.
But, you know,
it's the hair.
Suppose, well, okay, actually, whatever.
No, personally, I think what it is right now we're between elections. People aren't thinking about elections a lot, and it's about celebrity. And the people recognize the name, and he's a celebrity. But I suspect as soon as you get into a serious election mode, Canadians don't have any history of electing people because of celebrity or popularity. That's not our tradition. People, in fact, the more they try to be celebrity, they tend to do worse. Like, you know, especially when celebrities try to run, they tend to be. So I don't know. But anyway, that's a total segue.
I also,
well, it's just related to that youthful. Yeah. You know?
I think.
But how can you call middle aged men youth? But
I think that anybody under 40 in this country, for example, thinks marijuana should be legalized. They don't get it. Why on earth is a plant throwing people in jail, right? And so Justin Trudeau coming out and saying...
what he said.
And saying what... Well, he's saying he's going to legalize marijuana, right? Yeah. He's also saying a bunch of other things, which I don't agree with. But he's saying that. And so those big issues, I think, resonate with those young people. However, on the flip side, we see Stephen Harper saying, you know, more prison sentences or longer prison sentences for drug-related crimes and things like that at the exact same time. Well, what is he doing? He's appealing to that older demographic. Well, we know in order to win a majority government in Canada, you only have to get 40%. And we also know that for every two middle-aged people that vote, three old people vote, right? And so he's playing the numbers game.
Yeah, you're right.
I just say here one thing. We're talking about a youth political culture, and my sense of the youth political culture is what has changed is youth assume that society will not be stable and consistent, that you're not going to hold a job for 20 years. You're never going to have job stability. That's just not reality. Secondly, they tend to be much more light libertarian. Like, what business of government to interfere in my life on stuff that doesn't harm anybody else? I mean, that's the marijuana thing. I think that's very much... so you have... It's a very different than people of the baby boomer generation who want government to do everything for them in many ways. And you know, the whole sort of, you know, NDP's national daycare strategy, which is very, very popular, I think, with people who don't have kids anymore because they think that should have happened. But I'm not convinced that, I mean, yes, it's a reasonable amount of money and the money is not a bad thing, but I'm not seeing it bowling over people who are in their 20s and 30s and having kids now. It's sort of like, well, what's the, you know, I think in their case, they'd be happier if the government just sent them a regular check.
And that's what Stephen Harper is. Stephen Harper is segregating us into groups. And they all do, right? So not to pick on Stephen Harper.
And he's not on the ballot anymore. but
he segregate, you know, politicians, parties will segregate their voters, right? And so they're going after families because, you know what, as a dad, you know, of a 9-year-old, I maybe don't care as much about the legalization of marijuana, even though I might still think, yeah, it's a ridiculous law, but it's not really affecting me on a day-to-day basis, right?
So you're saying you don't smoke dope anymore?
I've never smoked. But
he's just inhaled.
That's right. That's actually pretty accurate, yeah. I've been to parties where other people... It was a long time ago. I'm not going to vote as a parent with a laundry list of issues. I'm not going to vote for Justin Trudeau just because he wants to legalize marijuana, because really the reality is in my life it's not going to have a whole lot of value. Will I think society's better as a result of that policy? Sure, but maybe there's a laundry list of other policies which would detriment society, in my view. So
okay, so we've
segued way.
So who's got the bottle here of the whiskey? I was promised there'd be a bottle of whiskey here.
Oh, really? Oh, that's so fun. How come I've never been promised that?
Payment in kind. All right. So Bernard, we've talked a little bit about issues. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about some of your research around numbers and polls, and in particular, the big surprises that everybody on election day is going to go, wow, I didn't see that coming, but Bernard saw it coming.
So what, predict who's going to win that nobody was expecting?
Is there some wild card thing that's happening under the surface here that the media maybe isn't touching
on? One of the most interesting races in many ways is in Central Saanich, and where I don't think anybody's necessarily predicting Ryan Windsor won't win, but on the other hand, I think Ryan Windsor winning there as mayor of Central Saanich, he will be a good mayor of Central Saanich, but he's a guy, he's young enough that he's got a future political career. This is the sort of guy who, if I was to predict the first green premier of British Columbia, this is the sort of guy that I would look to. He's got enough time. The Greens in the next provincial election could very well be sitting on 10 to 15 seats and be, you know, be a threat to being something significant.
Yeah.
And he's the sort of guy who could show up then, become the leader, and do something.
Did we have him on our our show?
Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know about his political affiliation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he makes good wine as well. And it wasn't until after the show did I have any inkling that there was some green linkage.
No, not a little bit. He's very open in that he is
okay,
a green.
Okay, so he certainly talks the right way.
Well, and this is the thing. Like, a lot of people...
So to speak.
A lot of people...
What is the right way?
A lot of people don't realize, and this is not a new thing. I'm sure Bernard, because Bernard's been around green politics. I haven't. But Bernard's been around green politics for a long time. And there's that left-right dichotomy that we see in other parties. That really, the only thing that, you know, that unites... the Greens is the environmental agenda. On the whole rest of the spectrum, they could be anywhere. Am I right about that?
Sort of. It's the Greens can be both radical and conservative at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, the Greens have a global charter of values that you believe in, which, you know, every Green Party is supposed to subscribe to them. And a lot of traditional left-wing ways of running government do not fit well with them. On the other hand, the market and the business community aren't at all out of sync with a lot of them. And that using the market is not a bad idea. And there's a whole series of Greens that are beginning to do that. In Germany, the Greens won their first parliament, state parliament, a year and a half ago. And they're going into the federal election in Germany last year or earlier this year, possibly being, you know, one of the three main parties.
Yeah.
And then they suddenly took a major tack to the left, and suddenly all the upper middle class white people, high earning, you know, Germans suddenly decided, oh, these guys want to tax the crap out of us, and they left.
Yeah.
And they didn't vote for them, and they lost a pile of their votes.
Somewhere. Well, and in Iceland, when Susan Lowe, when she was on our show, which you were away for, I don't know if you ever actually listened to it or not,
John. I listened to everything twice.
But in Iceland, there's a left green and a right green.
Mm-hmm.
And
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and yeah. It's and they obviously have some common values, but yeah. One will take a more socialist approach to government, the other will take a more free market approach.
Anyway, so Ryan Windsor's, I think, is a very interesting one in the future to see where he's
one
going.
To watch.
In the city of Victoria, I think a lot of traditional political pundits are going to be very surprised on Saturday night when Lisa Helps wins. I don't think Ida Chung and Dean Fortin's campaigns are going to be surprised because they already know those numbers, but I think a lot of other people are going to be surprised, and I think they'll be surprised at how high the voter turnout will be in Victoria. I would not be surprised if Victoria hit somewhere between 45 and 50% turnout.
Yeah, wow.
I don't think it's unrealistic.
I'll be eating the chocolate hat from the
you
last
will be.
I'm still not changing my prediction. Predictions.
I do have another. One thing that we. Langford, I think, could set a new record in voter turnout, as in lower. They already had the worst last time. I think it might go lower.
Oh, I don't know. Bernard, there's quite a fight out there to keep those councillors.
Yeah, but who cares? Who out there cares about that election? Because there's no opposition to them that's organized.
Well, it could be that that's true. Okay, if it's not organized, then I see your point. If it's organized, then I think the voter turnout will be higher.
It's the and you have that neighbors of Langford or whatever group that sort of coalesced, but they are they disorganized.
Okay.
And so I don't think in Langford I see absolutely. I mean, Stu Young is I think the only mayor running for re-election who didn't bother to go to Shaw to do his one 2-minute Shaw thing.
Although
he appeared on CFAX today, so today happens to be 2 days before the election on Saturday.
We're going to get him on the show next week, right, John?
It's Langford. I mean, that might be also a very low one. Same with Highlands might also be incredibly low because Highlands. There isn't a lot of
Highlands
people.
Highlands was always the highest turnout.
Not necessarily. Highlands isn't always necessarily high. It all depends. There's no serious race for mayor there this time. There's just David Shabib and one of the councillors.
I'm going to be eating a lot of hats. You're going to be eating a lot of hats.
And they don't have that many people running for council, including normally the more candidates you have, the more people bringing people out to vote. They have, I think, I can't remember now, is 8 for 6, of which two of them are a couple. Mm. So, you know, they're basically not getting any extra. It's questionable whether you're going to really excite a lot of people to show up and whether there's anybody really excited at all. Because, I mean, in Highlands, the better vote has come out when there's been a race for mayor. There's no race for mayor there this time.
So we've talked about Victoria. Mm-hmm. Let's just skip Saanich.
Mm-hmm.
Except
for we're all voting for Colin Platt. Yes.
I'm not because I live in Sooke.
Well, change your address.
on every show, I've said that I'll vote for whomever we've interviewed.
You're voting for Bernard. You live in San Antonio.
Okay, let me announce here. Let me announce here is I am very seriously considering running in 2018.
Where and when?
Oh, it'd be in Saanich for council. I would have run this time if my life. I had too many different things happen at the same time that I couldn't consider running this time. Otherwise, I would have run this time. But
well,
things happen.
So where it? Well, and we're gonna drag this man out to run.
No, he's gonna be on Sioux council next time, whether he wants to or not. Because we'll sign his nomination papers.
That's right.
Get Catherine to forge his signature.
I know exactly.
And he'll find out on election day he's winning.
Exactly. Now, where, okay, so why don't we tie this up? Because we could literally go on for hours and have way too much fun. Where, you've identified Victoria, where therefore do you think might be the other second most interesting slash exciting place?
North Saanich. North Saanich has been insanely divisive as a council for way too long. And you've now got an organized slate there called Team North Saanich. And then you've got Save North Saanich is endorsing five people. And so you've basically got mano a mano, two sides fighting.
Yes.
And then you've got Mayor Alice Finnell running against Dorothy Hartshorn.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Dorothy Hartshorn's been gone out of town too long. She's not part of Team North Saanich, and I've not seen anything them formally saying vote for her, though I don't think any of them want Alice Finnell back as mayor.
Correct.
I think what we could end up seeing there is Dorothy Hartshorn as mayor, all of Team North Saanich elected, and the last one being Jeff Orr.
Wow.
Which will make it very, very interesting because the three current incumbent Team North Saanich people I find to be the most close-minded. The two new people, Jack McClintock and Stephen Pierce, and Dorothy Hartshorn and Jeff Orr, I think could work as a voting bloc to be the majority.
Wow.
Which might bring a total new tone to North Saanich. Maybe.
I've done a bunch of work out that area, so that's fascinating to me. We are extraordinarily lucky, Paul Holmes, co-creator of Social Media Camp, to have recruited such a brilliant political mind to our show.
We forgot Sydney.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't understand the race for mayor in Sydney either, and I don't know what's going on there. There's something going on there. The fact that Don Amos wants to come back to stop Steve Price from becoming mayor, and the current council basically is backing Steve Price. There's something going on there, and nobody can tell me what's going on. So if you guys know anything about that or understand it, I'd love to know. But it seems to be a fairly, fairly serious fight.
I have not been made aware of – I've asked the same questions. And I am one, and I suppose if I was that person, I might have a different opinion. But I am not in favor of someone who's been involved in politics 10, 12, 15 years – retiring and then coming back quite a bit later in life and running.
Well,
I really think there's
long.
A.
Was it 6 years out?
6 years. That he's been out, Don Amos?
Yeah.
I think it's been longer than that. Anyway, I'd have to check my numbers. Yeah. But needless to say, we had a Mel Cavalier years ago. We have now a Don Amos in Sydney. We have a. Is it Jack Maher in.
In Central Saanich.
Is there a. With all due respect to those men, allow younger people to get involved.
Yeah, but so obviously you wouldn't be a fan of the comeback tour of bands either then.
Of whom?
Well, like, you know, when tour bands, you know, old bands do their comeback tours years later when they should have stayed retired.
No, I am not. Oh, I read something about them trying to get Led Zeppelin to come back, and I thought, no, Heart's rendition of Stairway to Heaven was way better.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard of this. What is it? Led Zeppelin?
You ever heard the Rolf Harris version of Stairway to Heaven?
No.
Yeah, ignoring all his court case and, you know, his conviction of that. Just look Stairway to Heaven.
Rolf Harris.
Okay. Watch that. Yeah,
okay, very cool.
Pink Floyd's got a new album up.
All right.
Pink Floyd is still around. Sid Barrett died, I thought.
There's a new person.
I can't believe that they ever let Sid Barrett go from Pink Floyd.
Time to wrap it up. Because we should be moving from here right into the bar.
So John,
cool.
Let's make a promise to our listeners. Promise to our listeners will be next week's show will not all be about municipal politics in Victoria.
Well, it's because we've got a federal election to start talking about. That's coming up. People are vying for the nominations. Federal election. It's only 11 months away.
We will have...
That gives you what? That only gives you what? 40-odd shows to do? 45 shows?
It's going to be 4 months away, but
we'll have something benign. No. Something terribly interesting, but unrelated to politics.
Well, I'd certainly like to have Bernard back and have a sort of review, but it might not be next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today, Bernard.
Glad to be here finally.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he can become a regular. Then you would really have to get him that bottle of whiskey.
I think so.
Although I'd certainly like some bottle of something.
He's got expensive
taste. And not milk. Until we meet again.
Cheers.
Cheers.